If scary movies give you dread, keep you up late night in bed, here's a podcast that will help you ease your mind. We'll explain the plot real nicely, then we'll talk about what's frightening so you never have to have a spooky time. It's Ruined.
Hello, welcome to Ruined. I'm Hallie.
Oh, hello, I'm Allison.
And this is a podcast. We ruin a horror movie just for you. Allison, how are you doing? I heard you have a little friend I'd like to see.
Oh, I do. Look at my tiny notebook.
It makes me so happy.
It's so small for those of you who are not Patreon members.
Paint us a word picture.
You're missing a video. It is a, what is this, 2 inches by an inch and a half?
Beats me.
Couldn't tell you. This could be a yard. I don't know.
You do have giant hands.
I'm large. It is a very tiny notebook that my friend Julia got me that has eyes on it. And it's very small. And I love it.
I love it.
It's so tidy. Look how little this is. I feel like a monster.
Do you think you'll put your comedy, like your stand-up notes? Or what would you use it for?
I could not possibly write small enough. Also, it's so small that like even just like to get it, like to like get it flat enough to write is, I think, impossible. And it's more just like this will just exist on my desk as a buddy.
What I like about him, or I don't know why I'm gendering it, but in my mind of him, what I like about him is that he looks so surprised to be a notebook. Like he just woke up as a notebook and has to recalibrate what he thought his life was going to be.
Yeah. He's and real tiny.
Haven't we all had those mornings, you know?
Haven't we all? I've got some stickers in here. So I don't know. It's like my desk is a disaster.
It's popping off. Oh, I have a mound of absolute fucking garbage next to me. You know me.
Yep.
I have some
surrounded by garbage.
I have some flaxseed crackers. Actually, not bad.
Do you like them? I feel like I have such a tumultuous relationship with flax and the crackers.
I do. I like a little seed. I like a tiny little
seed. I love a
seed.
And sometimes I get them being like, I really want a crunchy seedy cracker.
Yes.
And what I get is like the bark of a tree.
These are kind of popping off. I mean, Flacker is a horrible name, but I'll recommend.
Yeah, that's a bad name.
And then ex-boyfriend of the pod, Dave, came over and he's just continually dropping off stuff like as he finds them like in his closet, like clears out like my residual stuff. And he found the half-empty bag of the Kit Kat white fucking, the ultimate betrayal of my life, the Witch's Brew, but from this year. So it's these are the horrible ones. And I'm so disappointed. But I'm like, I guess I'll take them to work. It seems wasteful just to toss them.
Yeah.
I don't know. Is there an expiration date for that kind of thing? I guess is the question.
I say like a couple months.
Is January too late to bring in what is clearly an open bag of Halloween candy? What do you think?
I would say don't, like, just like when you have a moment that no one's around, that's when you put it out. And then it's just like, where did this come from?
Well,
but
I did.
It's not really like, oh, I brought this from the back of a closet of an apartment I don't live in anymore.
Allison, I think you underestimated how much I am myself at work. It will be immediately obvious who it is. I've talked about these. I complained when they changed.
Okay, everybody will be very aware that they're yours.
But I think the other reason I realized why I like it so much is that it's so aesthetically, I feel like I'm doing like a makeup video. It's so aesthetically pleasing. I love the little witch. And I love
the witch.
I love everything about this. So maybe
love witches.
Maybe part of it was mentally. I don't know. I felt love.
I would say put them in a bowl in your apartment and just leave them there. And people, if they come over, people will eat that.
Okay, good. Yeah,
I have a giant bowl of candy that's just on my kitchen counter.
And I love that.
At all I actually have lots of bowls of food that are just always available. Because I have like this big glass, like fish bowl full of these like Belgian lemon hard candies that I have to order online because they're hard to find and they like hurt your mouth and I'm obsessed with them. But then I also have a small bowl of shelled pistachio, like pistachios to kind of pick at, and then a bowl of Raisinets.
Oh, I love the Raisinets. Yeah, I do want to, now that I have my own place, I want it to be a place where people can come by and I'll have snacks or like things for them to eat. That is, again, a leveling up that I've never been able to achieve, but I feel like
it's
it can be done.
It's a wonderful way to live.
I just need to think thoughtfully about what those snacks are. And this is a good place to start. Candy, I myself find too disgusting to eat, and we'll go from there.
People will, like, it will be intriguing enough that if somebody's over, they'll be like, what's going on over here? And they'll want to try it. And
I love a little intrigue. I love a little mystery.
A little mystery.
Okay.
To kick off, we haven't done like a question in a long time, but we did get a message on Patreon. If you're a Patreon member, this is the kind of access you get to us. You can just ask us very specific questions at any time. Shannon Z asked if I could do a follow-up review on my eyeglass/jewelry cleaning machine that I had 1 year. I bought it a year ago because I bought it when I was
the anniversary
my dad's surgery, which was in February. I will say, I don't use it every day. I use it like once a month on my glasses and jewelry. Like, I think that's a month is like how dirty they need to get for me to justify running this.
Right.
Thing,
yeah.
Which requires almost no effort and time.
I just have a little cloth I clean my eyeglasses with, but I do like the idea of the technology.
The technology is, so if, for those who don't know, it's kind of like a little hot tub for your jewelry and your glasses. And I'm somebody who wears wireframe glasses, as are you. And the listener asked, I've read that they can rust the screws and scratch the lenses.
That's really interesting.
I have not had that happen.
Okay.
I cannot speak to if that is possible.
And do you remember what model it was or where you got
it?
Yes,
I have the Akuna, A-K-U-N-A. It's a whole company that makes just this one. It is on the higher end of the spending that, like, I didn't realize when I got served the ad for it on Instagram. I was like, well, I must just buy this one because advertising works. Yeah. You can absolutely, like, it was like $89 or something. And I was like, that seems right. But like, you can absolutely get a cheaper version for like $30 or $40 on Amazon, I believe. So just like, look for a, micro bubbles. I think that's what it is.
I do like the idea of you saving up like how, like all the filth on your glasses for each month. Like you get to the point where it's literally so cloudy that you'll put them in the machine. That's what I'm imagining.
Yes. Akua, not Akuna.
Akua. Okay.
A-K-U-A, a sonic jewelry cleaner. And I could see how rust could be a concern because you are keeping, you know, but you're putting things in water for a couple minutes, but I have not had any rust. I think as long as you dry it off afterwards, I will say that it makes my glasses so much cleaner. It feels like getting new. I just got a new pair of frames with a new prescription, so it's already like fabulous to be seeing. I recommend it, but I think you can find a cheaper one than the one I got, the Akua. There's one on Amazon for $35. It looks exactly the same. So I would say if you are interested in this world, do it. I clean my, you know, I don't have a lot of jewelry, but I clean my gold jewelry in it and it always comes out very shiny and sparkly. And all my friends who have big diamond engagement rings drop their rings in and they come out flashing. So highly recommend.
Wait, so sorry, do you have to dry them off? Are they wet when you take them out?
Yeah, because it's like you fill a little, it's literally like a hot tub for
wow. Jewelry. We need a video of this. I'm saying it now. Yes, you need to make a video so you can see it.
I will record a video of it that we will put on Instagram.
Okay. I don't know why I'm having a hard time imagining what we're talking about. But I
it's like a little bath. It's like a little bath.
I love it.
And you turn it on and it starts like there's like tiny, you can't even see them bubbles. And you just like leave them in for like 3 minutes or something like that. And then it turns off and then you take them out of the water. So like you know, I usually just like put them on a paper towel and let them like dry a little bit and then wash off the lenses and your brand new glasses.
Incredible. Absolutely
it's
incredible.
Great. So, highly recommend. That's an update on the jewelry cleaner. Thank you, Shannon, for even asking. Go get one.
And I think that's a lot of white women's business right up top, which is perfect because this is, of course, part of our Awful White Women Month.
It continues.
We're back at it with some legitimately awful white women. This is a movie recommended by Rosalind H. and Sarah A. on Patreon. So thank you so much. And the movie is, of course, The Neon Demon. We always like to have Allison react to the trailer. So, Allison, what are your thoughts about the Neon Demon trailer?
I mean, very into this as someone who worked in fashion briefly and still always kind of cares about clothes and models. A perfect world to be setting an awful white woman horror movie, and that's for sure.
Absolutely. This came out in 2016, and boy, does it feel like it. I feel like this is definitely a pre-Trump, so it's May of that year.
Yeah.
This is a pre-Trump horror movie. I don't know what about it, but it feels like a time capsule, sort of.
Yeah.
Like, definitely 2010s, and it was directed by Nicholas... I feel so bad. This is another thing, I'm like, I've never said his name out loud. I've seen his name a million times.
Brutal.
Nicholas Winding Refn. He also did Drive. He is... he did Bronson in 2008, Valhalla Rising. He's done a bunch of films.
Yeah.
This also packed with stars. We're talking Christina Hendricks. We've got Elle Fanning. Oh, wow. We've got Jenna Malone. We got Keanu Reeves. We've got,
wow. You know,
we're running down a list of top tier talent. Before we get into it, we also take a baseline scary. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of the best way, because there are a lot of different elements, but they're all, like, you know, obviously scary. Connected yeah. in this film. But I guess, like, how scary do you find the concept of somebody coveting your physical beauty as a woman?
Ooh, scary. Very scary. I mean, even, like, just being a regular woman, like a very middle-of-the-road, you-can-find-her-anywhere lady walking around. That's scary. So to be very, very beautiful in the way that I believe is happening in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Oof.
Yeah, I've obviously been deep in my, you know, again, post coming out rumination. And this movie, I think, accurately, and then in some parts kind of maybe a swing and a miss, but really the overall theme of it is how we as a society really strip mine women in particular, but all feminine people in general for their feminine beauty. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of like all the different aspects of that that is happening to a teenager, because when you become a model, you have to be a teenager.
Yes.
Which is insane.
Because and our I will beauty say standards are still
morally
child.
Wrong, yep. considering we know what happens to children who work in any industry. Like,
any
obviously,
industry.
Like, 18 should be the bare minimum. I mean, like, it's just insane to think about, like, the being 15, traveling alone, being alone with adults, like, all this shit that we know is a bad idea. Right. And this sort of one young woman's experience of it in a horror way. What do you think the twist in the Neon Demon will be, Allison?
Guess the twist.
I mean, the trailer doesn't give a ton of info in terms of, like, plot. Like, I mean, it's like you get the sense of, like, oh, a very young girl is entering the world of modeling, and people, you know, and it's scary. That's kind of all I could gather.
What do you think the plan is? What do you think they're going to, what are people thinking?
I think somebody's going to try and, like replace her, like become her.
Okay.
Like, single white female style, like one of the other young women is trying to get rid of her and, like, take her place, but, like, in a very, like, one-to-one way, like, trying to look like her, like, so that we don't know she's gone.
Yeah.
That's my guess.
I absolutely like that. Okay. We open on Jessie, played by Elle Fanning. She's in very editorial makeup, like an editorial, like, short, shiny blue dress. Her throat has been split. And there's blood sort of dumping down her chest and arms as she lays on a couch. And as we pull out, we see she's on a sound stage. And there's a photographer, and we'll find out his name is Dean, is shooting her corpse. Allison, it is, of course, just a photo shoot.
Yes, of course.
And afterwards, we see her in the, you know, in the green room. She's sort of trying to wipe all the fake blood off her arms. This is a movie filled with fake blood. And I just kept thinking they're going to get it on all these incredible outfits. Like, these are, at the end, they thank, like, every designer for loaning them, like, these gorgeous garments.
They just destroyed with fake blood.
Yeah, they're just covered in corn syrup. And as she does,
so sticky.
We see Ruby, the makeup artist, played by Jenna Malone, is sort of just staring at Jessie. And this is a very common thing in the movie, that people are just so struck with her beauty. And she comes over and says, do you mind if I help you? And starts helping her wipe down. She says, oh, you new to town? You know, you kind of have the look. And Jessie sort of reacts uncomfortably, but Ruby says, oh no, that deer in the headlights look is exactly what they're looking for.
Ooh,
I know. Jessie tells Ruby she's staying alone at a motel in Pasadena. And
this is in California.
Yeah. So this is LA. This is the LA. This is modeling. There's some mention of acting, you know, but it's a LA modeling/fashion scene, which is interesting. Like, I actually think this is, like, a movie that accurately depicts how lonely and scary it can be to be alone in LA. But it's interesting not to make this a New York movie. This seems like it should be a New York movie.
I just don't think of LA when I think of high fashion.
We just don't. We don't.
The industry isn't centered there. It's centered objectively in New York and in Europe. Like, it's not. California has been only very recently part of the conversation when it comes to high fashion.
Sure, and there's plenty of work here, I'm sure.
There's lots of modeling to be done, but it's not that kind of modeling.
It's not, you're going to be a model. And there, as soon as she has any success, we'll see. Basically, the first thing you'll say, it's like, well, once you succeed here, we'll obviously get you right to New York. You don't, you don't have to stay here very long.
No, this is a nightmare.
And so they're chatting, and Ruby says, you're staying alone in a motel. What do your parents think of that? And Jesse says they don't. They aren't around anymore. So again,
okay, got it.
She's alone. She's entering a new terrifying world. She does not have anyone to go back to. Ruby invites her to a party that night, and it's like set in like obviously what is like a hardcore like it is black. It's like red strobe lights in a totally black space. Like it's supposed to be like the most hardcore LA club. Cool. And Jesse is wearing basically like an American Eagle like outfit, like a. Like a little skirt and like a tucked in shirt, which was very funny. And also like, you wouldn't have cool clothes, you know?
Right.
And we see that she meets up with Ruby, and then Ruby has two friends who are both models, Sarah and Gigi. We also see across the room, there is a man looking at Jesse menacingly, sort of predatorially. Mm-hmm. In the bathroom, they sort of have their first little mean girl moment. Gigi puts on a lip. And then Ruby starts putting lipstick on Jesse, and they start talking about the names of lipsticks. This one's called Red Rum, and Ruby says women are more likely to buy lipstick if it's named after food or sex. And I'm like, well, what are you supposed to name it after? Like verses of the Bible? Like skin illnesses? Right. Like what the fuck are you talking about?
Animals? Like
tax code? Of course. Like I will food say, and sex the only thing our brains care about? Like what are you talking about?
Code. Right. W9?
Like, yeah. Also, Red Rum is an allusion to The Shining. So I'm like, that's not even rum literally, you know?
No, like, it's like murder.
Yeah.
But years ago, I was at a Sephora, and there was like a line of like, I believe it was like a British line of nail polish. And there was this like kind of like creamy white, like just like an off white one. It was called Load.
Wow, a big swig.
First scene. It looked like a bottle of cum.
Wait, so did you buy all of them?
Yes, of course. I own the company now.
You're like, we will only be selling one color and it will be
Load. One color. We're never changing Load. The name.
I love
Maybe one day we'll have Jizz. But like Load, I was like,
incredible.
Also, Load is like of all of the words.
All the words. Of all the euphemisms.
For that,
Load.
It's the weirdest one.
I feel like Load is like what a 13-year-old would call it. Like yeah, it's like Load is like,
like when you're like new to coming.
Yeah, new to the project. Yeah, it was like Jizz is almost like funny enough. I don't know. It's like Load is like somehow
Jizz is kind of like goofy.
Oh Load my god, so I love like, that.
It's so I'll
that's so funny.
I'll find the photo and send Thank it you. To you guys so we can share that when this comes out because it is fucking gross.
That's amazing. And Gigi sort of teasing Jesse and says, "Oh, she'd be food. She'd be dessert because she's so sweet." And Gigi is sort of just gushing over like, oh, are you naturally blonde? Is that your original nose? Which it is. Jesse's like the natural beauty, which we'll get into, of course. Okay. And then Gigi's boasting about she's had an insane amount of work done. And she's very proud of it. She goes to this Dr. Andrew in Beverly Hills. It's like, he calls me the bionic woman. And Jesse says, is that a good thing? Gigi good turns question. On a dime and says to her, so your parents are dead. That must be really hard for you.
Okay.
And Jesse looks over and realizes, oh, Ruby must have told them about my parents' demise. Yes. You know, and they said, okay, well, you don't have a family, but you must have a boyfriend. But Jesse
also
explains.
That's an insane thing to share about some. It's like, oh, you're going to meet my friend Jesse. Oh, what's Jesse like? It's like, oh, she's a model. She lives here. Her parents are dead. Like, it's just like not what you would bring
well,
up.
Well, I think you're absolutely right. I think a lot of this movie asks you
flag.
To be like, hey, all of these people know or about to know that she is not old. Like, she's like a teen girl that
with
you
no
are
parents.
Inviting to nightclubs. And like it's like their relationship to begin with is already like, what are we doing? Like, hanging out with this teen. And they're all supposed to be like in their early 20s. Like, it's not like they're so much older. But I agree, like, there are certain, like, I think we're supposed to constantly be aware of how young she is, you know, or at least I was, you know, maybe that's not the point of the movie, but boy, she looks it. And I believe she was 16, Elle Fanning was 16 when she was cast, and then 17 when they shot this. She looks like a teen, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And this she's is, also just, yeah. like, a younger, like, she's, yeah. she looks, I mean, she is a young person, but she has, like, very, like, the doe-eyed, like, it, she reads even younger than she is.
Yeah, so again, I think that's with intent, you know, obviously. A young woman's beauty that people are going to want for various reasons throughout this film. So Gigi keeps, like, pressing her, like, okay, you don't have any family, but you must have a boyfriend. Like, oh, you come on. And Jesse says, I just got to town. I don't even know anyone yet. Sarah butts in and says, she's asking, who are you fucking? Isn't that the question? A pretty girl walks in and everyone wonders, who is she fucking? Who could she fuck? How high could she climb? And is it higher than me? And my reaction is, honey, let's leave a little mystery. And I mean that both to her character, like, you don't have to be that pressed. But yeah. also to the director. I'm like, girl, you don't have to explain it. We get it. Like, right. we, you don't have to give us a little monologue. You know, we understand what we're talking about. A new hot model in the scene. Everyone's going to be kind of like, should I take her out? Should I befriend her? Who is she fucking? Is she going to fuck somebody to get ahead mm-hmm. in her career?
Yes.
And they say, they're basically like, well, you've obviously had sex with men, right? Do you even like men? And she says, oh yeah, I have sex with men all the time. But in a way that obviously she hasn't, like she's yeah. just a teenager, right. you
just
know?
Kind of like,
yeah, I fuck all the time. Yeah. Yeah. I'm taking loads all the time, you know?
And your nails, man?
So Gigi and Sarah, they walk back out into the club proper and Jesse sort of lingers to admire the lipstick that Ruby gave her, and Ruby calls her back, and they end up watching like sort of a bondage performance. Again, this is Los Angeles. I feel like this is every Tuesday. Like,
you can't
block without this kind of performance in a good way. I think that's great.
Yeah, yeah. That's like, that's why people live in cities, is like, well, there's access.
Yeah, the nightlife. Kind of exactly. And they're sort of watching this woman be suspended and sort of lifted in the air by ropes. And Ruby starts laughing and Jesse joins her. And it is sort of this moment of like, this is fucked up, but like, we're sort of forming a friendship, even though everything about yeah. this is going to be fucked up.
Of course.
In the morning, Jesse wakes up at her motel room in Pasadena. And this movie treats Pasadena like it's like a fucking hellhole. And at least for me, the people I know who move from Pasadena, it's because they have enough money to move to Pasadena.
Right.
Like, it's not, maybe that's an in-joke as well, is that it's, of all the places that she could be, Pasadena's pretty nice, you know?
Yeah, I know. There's, like, definitely worse parts of L.A. to be in.
And maybe that's sort of, for the people who live in L.A., a joke for us.
Yeah, like, LOL. Like, yeah, I have friends who live there who are like, well, we really wanted to buy a bigger house. And I'm like, you did it.
Yeah, exactly. People we know who've had babies who are like, yes, where should right. I live? Pasadena.
Yeah.
In the morning. Oh, yeah. So she puts on a lip and she goes to her interview with the head of a modeling agency played by Christina Hendricks. The name of the head of the modeling agency is Roberta Hoffman. And she looks at the photos. So the only photos that Jesse has are the photos that Dean took at the beginning of the movie. And we find out, like, he just reached out to her. He saw her photo on Facebook and he's like, do you want to take photos? Roberta tells her, be careful with that. Don't just go out and meet guys who are going to take your photo. Please be cautious about that. Also, they're bad. So she kind of puts them aside and says, I see 30 girls a day that are good. You're going to be great. She says, we just need to get you some photos that aren't so amateur hour. And I'm going to get you a test shoot with Jack MacArthur, who is the name in the business. Of course, Jesse doesn't know who he is because she is not in the business. So she says, you get photos done by him. If they're good, if he likes you. This we're going to New York. You know what I mean? Yeah. This is happening. Right. I think that we could really fucking do this. I'm talking international runways. You got a baby. So of course, Jesse, this is a dream. Like, oh my God, I have to live in a dump and I go in here and a woman tells me I'm so beautiful. I could travel the world and make money off of my beauty. Right.
Right. Right.
The gamble dream. Is paying off. And Roberta tells her, okay, all I need is a voided check and a copy of her driver's license. And Jesse's, her face falls. And of course, both we, the audience, and Roberta realizes she's not 18. She's underage.
She is.
But Roberta gives her a parental consent form and says, all I need from you is to bring this back with a signature on it. Someone needs to sign it. And going forward, you're going to tell photographers you're 19. And Jesse says, well, no one's... Yeah.
No.
Jesse's like, well, no one's going to believe that, right? And Roberta says they'll believe whatever we tell them to believe, because I'm assuming that's how it works. I'm sure there's plenty of people who are underage who do not have those kinds of consent forms. Then they're like, just say you're 18. We're not going to fucking do anything, you know?
Right. They don't give a shit.
Back in her motel room, Jessie just signs the form herself. Obviously, it's not like they're meeting her parents or checking or whatever. And you know what? A lot of this movie, have you seen the movie Jawbreaker?
Yes. I mean, a million years ago, but yes.
I fucking love Jawbreaker. Jawbreaker is like this movie, like some of the dialogue feels like they're trying to do that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't have the comedic element. So it's just doesn't.
I can totally see that.
You know, it's not like popping the way it should, but it does to me really capture the loneliness of Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I moved here when Dave and I were together. I already have friends here.
Right.
If you don't know anyone, it is a fucking lonely town, because unlike New York, you have to know where to go in order to go there. You have to find, how do you find places? In New York, you could get on the subway and literally go anywhere. And it has its own problems, obviously. But
of course. But the year I lived in LA, I was just like, oh, this is wrong for me. Like, this is a very wrong for, like, because I was just there, like everybody was coupled. I was just kind of like, around, there was no, like, you couldn't just like walk around and go somewhere. You had to do, like, it just to me felt like a very, 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 very lonely place. And I had a lot of friends.
Yeah, it's a really, I think I've said this before on the pod, but our friend Anna Dresden wrote this sketch. If not, I'm going to give her credit. But there was a Cut for Time SNL sketch about a open mic in LA. And there, I think it was with Kristen Stewart was on. It was like Kristen Stewart and Kate McKinnon were sort of a Tegan and Sarah parody. And they're like, oh, we're a musical group who escaped from a cult, but also we own all these Airbnbs. So at the end of their set, they say, so if anyone wants to feel completely alone, oh no, if you ever want to feel unsafe in the loneliest city in the world, just give us a call. And boy, I haven't lived in that many cities, but boy, I'll tell you, you know what I mean? They're not wrong. Anywho, she signs the form herself, and then she goes on a date with Dean, the photographer we met at the beginning.
Okay.
And they go up to the foothills, they look out over LA, and Dean watches us sort of like Jessie walk sort of ballerina-like on the ledge looking out over the city. And she, of course, tells him, like,
when I was a kid, I would sneak out into the roof at night. I thought the moon looked like a big round eye. And I would look up and I'd say, do you see me?
And she tells him, I can never figure out what I'm good at, but I know I'm pretty and you can make money with pretty. And Dean tells her, well, I think you're probably more than that. I mean,
you're a human being.
Absolutely. It's like absolutely beautiful, but I'm sure you have other talents. And she says, well, I ran into a problem because the agency said they would sign me, but I have to lie about my age. And of course, he says, well, how the fuck old are you? And she says, I just turned 16.
Oh.
And for a second, you think Dean's going to do the right thing, because Dean sort of like sits back and he goes, I think I left the stove on. So you think maybe Dean's going to bounce? No, he's not, you know. But he's going to, in the cadre of freaks we're going to be meeting. He's on the tamer side, you know. Okay. So I think he is supportive. But again, it's like, even the nice people around her are people who, like, he does want to fuck her. Like, he does want to, like, be around this intense beauty, which when you're 16, it's like, you should be able to rely on older people to keep you safe. But as women are like, you know, as anybody really, but
yeah.
I don't know. You just know that that's not true, unfortunately. And so it's like, even though he's on her side, you know, and I think we're supposed to think that he is right, there is that moment of like, you could have done the right thing, but.
Yeah.
Ooh. When he goes to drop her off, he leans in to kiss her, and she kind of turns away.
She just told you she's a child.
And when she goes up to her room, Dean calls to her and says, look, and the moon has come out. And so in that moment, it was like a nice thing. And she says, would you want to go out again? And he agrees.
Oh my God.
Allison, she struggles to open her door. That's what we say. It's like, it's a shitty motel, so all the doors stick. It's like constantly like having to force the door open.
Yeah.
It opens the door. Can't turn the overhead lights on, but can see that she's left this sliding glass door of the patio open, and a figure is moving in the darkness. So she freaks out. She runs down to the management office, and which I'm like, I've lived in buildings here. There's no one's there off hours, you know.
But we're barely there on hours.
And we meet Hank, who's the manager, played by Keanu Reeves, who is like an absolute mean, rude drunk, who's just like, oh my God, are you fucking stoned coming down here? And then his right-hand man, Mikey, they both kind of try to blow her off, but she says, someone's in my room. If you don't do something about it, I'm calling the cops. And they're like, oh, okay, we're obviously doing drugs in here. Don't call the cops.
Yeah.
They go up to the room. They force the door open because they can't. The lock is jammed. They end up kicking the door in, and initially they see nothing. And Hank says, "You're going to have to pay for that fucking door. Like, this is bullshit." Mikey looks in, and we see there's a fucking mountain lion has come in through the open door and is on the bed and roars at them.
This is something that L.A.
Yeah.
has, which is
100%
giant cats, predatory cats. There's
sometimes
cougars.
Sometimes a bear even shows up. Like, we bears definitely
around.
Have...
They're around. Whereas, like, New York has, like, you know, a disgusting menagerie of animals. Like, but the...
But they're New they're York animals.
And they're not that big.
Like, right, the, yeah.
A mountain lion, like, can and will kill you.
Right, like a rat...
A raccoon is just kind of, like, in the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, if a rat got into your room, it would be really upsetting, but it couldn't kill you. And then that made me want to ask, how many rats do you think you could fight off?
I don't...
No, I'm asking, Allison, let's be real here. How many
rats could I fight off?
Successfully fight off.
I'm going to throw up.
and you are allowed a weapon, but I'm going to say the weapon is a frying pan.
Six?
I was going to say three.
Yeah. I guess it depends.
Six
like,
is
what,
ambitious.
What their vibe is.
Yeah. Do they have a plan?
Are they organized?
Discuss? Yes. That's the question.
Or are they just kind of scurrying around? Because I think if they were all kind of panicking, right. And I also was panicking, obviously, mm-hmm. I could maybe manage. Let's say five. Five.
Yeah. Okay. No, in my mind, they're it's coordinated. It's a coordinated attack.
There's a coordinated attack. Three.
They found you eating their pizza and decided to take you down. The next day, Jesse. So that would put me out for a week, but Jesse has to go to the shoot with Jack MacArthur.
Would leave California.
Well, there's a lot of moments before we get to the actually what would you do where I was like, Allison would have already left a million times.
I would have been like, I will just do anything else with my life.
I would have at least, I mean, it wouldn't be the right move, but I would try to live with Dean or I would, call Ruby. Like, I would try to find a different place where a mountain lion couldn't get in.
You could never sleep in that room
no.
again. You would always be like, is it
knows.
Here?
Yeah.
No, it knows you're there. It knows your scent.
It knows how comfortable your bed is.
Oh, no. Big kitty in a big bed.
So the next day she goes to a shoot with Jack MacArthur, only to find out that he was the man who was sort of staring at her menacingly at the club.
Okay.
Fortunately, Ruby is there as the makeup artist. And it kind of puts Jesse at ease. And she has sort of these gold, like metallic sort of space designs on her face. And everything seems like it's going well until she starts shooting with Jack, who treats her entirely like a prop, like an object, right? Mm-hmm. She tells all there's like, obviously like, assistants and like other people involved in the studio. And Ruby says, you guys can leave. It's going to be a closed set.
I don't like that.
Ruby tells him, I don't mind staying. It's totally fine. I'll be quiet. I'll just be in the back. But he kicks her out too. And of course, a surprise to no one who knows we're watching a horror movie, he immediately tells Jesse to take off her dress.
Yep.
Which she does. And again, she looks like a teen. She is obviously a scared teen.
Yeah.
And he says, no, all of it. And so she has to take off her bra and underwear, too. She's shaking. And he tells her, turn around. And then, Allison, the lights suddenly all go out. First time I saw this, I'm like, this is the scariest fucking thing I can imagine.
I can't think of anything scarier.
Like, to be in that situation and have that happen, it's like, well, I guess all the things I was hoping wasn't going to happen is about to happen to me.
Are definitely
going
to happen.
But instead, we see her, well, not instead, but instead we see her sort of under a spotlight and Jack is walking over with sort of a silver container. He walks up behind her and he just starts smearing gold paint across her chest and neck, which would be fine if you had had the makeup artist do that and it was part of the shoot and this had all been discussed and she knew that she'd be nude. Like, it's like,
And it wasn't you and her in a dark room alone.
And also, she's a teen girl.
Girl.
I mean, maybe you think she's 19. But exactly. She's totally new to the city. She's new to modeling. So it's like all these things could, real life, God willing, there's some mitigation of this. But you're watching, you're like, oh, God. Oh, no. Just hoping it doesn't get worse, you know?
Yeah.
Fortunately, that's where it stops. He takes her photo. And then later we see Jesse leaving. She's showered and she finds Ruby smoking outside, which is surprising because it seems like she's been there for hours, you know?
Right.
And Ruby says, how'd it go? She's like, I was really great. And Jack thinks the photos are really great. And who knows, like, if they turned out well, like, he may be able to get me other work. And, you know, he might be sending it to some of the designers to do runway work. And Ruby says, that's great. I don't think you should be alone with him.
Yeah. Correct.
But Jesse says, and this is so hard because like I was just thinking about, we don't have to get into specific, but just like this dynamic, which I feel like when we were in our 20s was, I remember saying something to this effect about someone who later was like, turned out to be a sexual predator. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that obviously. And it was not the context where someone was asking me about that. But I remember being like, I don't know. He seems okay to me. As if that like meant anything or like
I know
contradicted anything or like, but I remember thinking that about this person who later, like, I mean, yeah. You know, we don't have to get into it, but like horrible shit came out and I was like, damn, I thought in some level that my
experience
was objective on some level.
Experience and not, right.
Yeah. And I think a lot of really positive change has happened. And at least people are aware of the fact. I think of like even Harvey Weinstein where people were like,
right.
He was fine. It's like, no, actually, even when he was not sexually assaulting people, he was a monster to work
yes.
with. So
yes.
maybe he wasn't right. mean to you, Meryl Streep, because you're fucking printing money for him.
Right.
But that experience of a person mm-hmm. is not universal, right? Yes. Especially in this kind of thing where it's like your work and
where you have something
comedy,
they want.
And right. also, and I'll say this, and like, maybe this is like too morbid to say, but I swear to God, when we were in our 20s, it was almost like there were so many people, so many men.
There were so many
people that people said stuff about that I was kind of like, all right, I guess everyone's horrible and there's no way to know, which in fact, the yeah. opposite is true. It's like, right. that's why you have a whisper network. That's why people tell people things is like, you can't just let the Elle Fannings of the world walk into those situations if you have yeah. information.
No, there were, I just remember so many, just specifically in comedy, getting like, oh, don't go on the road with this person. Don't open, you know, for them.
Yeah.
Don't
be alone
go out with
them
after a show. Like, yeah. don't hang out. Like, and it's, and I'm not saying like there was one person that it was many people.
Yeah.
And like, and it was just like almost too hard to keep track of. So I was just like, all right. And you just move through the, like, you know,
yeah.
it just was a dark, the entertainment and like the industry where like people are the product is such a, like, so like modeling, fashion, TV, acting, like all of it, like comedy.
Yeah.
It's just so, not that it doesn't also happen in tons of other
right.
industries.
Right, yeah,
way.
Exactly.
But like, you're, you know, like night industries where you're out at night and that's part of the
and
job.
And people are drinking like, and yeah, it is about
so
your body
fucked.
In a lot of ways. Like even
yeah.
when we were coming out, because I think a lot about how like the comedy I did was like straight girl, Amy Schumer comedy, because that was what was popular, you know, 10 yeah. or 12 years ago when I was doing stand-up. And how much of that was about like, how many situations was I in where I was like, well, I want to be here, but I'm wildly uncomfortable. So I'm just going to ignore how uncomfortable I am.
Yes.
And I do think there is, and I'm an optimist. I do feel like there has been progress in the feminist, you know, endeavor that I hope.
Correct.
And I think young people are more aware of like, you don't have to accept this in a way that like, I just thought like, well, you can't change people or change how things are done. And people now are like, actually, we have to. In fact, that's
right.
what we are
it
doing.
It is unacceptable to let this continue on as it is. But I was just like, I guess this is what it
yeah.
is. And like, I like remember being like, at least I've never been like physically assaulted in a very bad way. Like
yeah,
that's how
exactly.
I like left my 20s and my early comedy days being like,
yeah.
I guess I'm, it wasn't that bad because I wasn't, yeah.
Absolutely. Like, and again, like moving, like comparing it to the worst possible thing rather than having an objective, positive,
yes.
like, actually, it should be
yes.
good. You should
yes.
be able to do
you
this and
not
ever feel
scared or objectified or threatened or
yeah.
othered or like, it's just,
I have a lot of stuff to think about comedy as someone who doesn't do it anymore. But yes,
yeah.
we should do that, a whole episode about that.
Yeah, we'll do that at some point.
But Jesse shrugs her off and says, Jack seemed fine to me. And Ruby says, that's not what I'm talking about. That's not what I mean. But Jesse, again, she's young and she's kind of got her first taste of fame. She says, I'm not as helpless as I look. I'm fine. But Ruby insists on giving Jesse her number and says, like, if anything ever happens, just call me. It'll be fine. Afterwards, Ruby meets Gigi and Sarah for lunch, which is 3 coffees and a fruit cup, which again, LA, very funny.
Hilarious.
And Ruby mentions, Jesse was there being shot by Jack MacArthur. And they are shocked. They say he does not shoot new models. Like, Gigi has started shooting with him. But only just, and she's been at
right.
it for years, you know, and she, you know, Gigi's like, actually, you know, I've shot with him way more often. So that's actually more impressive. She just started one time. Who knows what will happen?
Mm-hmm.
But Sarah says, you know, that won't last. Like, we're getting older, you know, and
yeah.
she says, who wants spoiled milk when you get fresh meat? Well, you got
Ew.
Me there, Sarah.
That's, I guess, something.
Yeah, a disgusting way to put it. But Ruby says, and I think there is something interesting because I think a lot about this, especially as someone who works in entertainment, is the thing about, Ruby says, the thing about Jesse is she has it. Like, she has the thing that we're talking about. Like, we're all beautiful. You know, like, we're all beautiful people.
Sure, you're all models. Like,
yeah, you're working models. She has it. And I feel like you do see that in some celebrities where they're not so much hotter than everyone, or they're not like whatever. I mean, they have money, so they look as best as they possibly can. But
there's something.
They've got it.
That like takes them to a different level.
Soon after, Jesse goes to a audition for a runway show for the designer Roberto Sarno. And Sarah is also there. And they have to be in their underwear, makeup free, in high heels, waiting like for hours to walk for this designer.
Also just standing in high heels for a few hours, even if I'm fully clothed and like no one's judging me, that's a nightmare.
I know. And it's like, they can't even wear like a little tank top. You got to have their panties. Like, what are we doing? You know,
what are we doing?
But Sarah walks first, and Roberto Sarno has barely looks up. He's seen it before, honey, you know? Mm. And his assistant says, Sarah, we've seen you before, right? And Sarah just immediately knows I'm fucked. When Jesse walks, Roberto looks up. He can't believe it. She crushes. And again, to me, as somebody who doesn't know fashion, it all kind of looks like walking. So I was like, okay, you know?
Yeah.
But then she's off to get measured. She's going to be in her first runway show, which is, again, one photo shoot. Now she's fucking doing actual design runways. So Sarah is struggling to fight back tears, leaves, gets dressed, and goes to the restroom sobbing. And she stares at herself in the restroom. She's a beautiful woman, a stunning woman. And she picks up what, I couldn't tell if it was an ice bucket or if it was like the thing that the paper towels are in, but like it's a silver metal container, shatters the mirror with it, screaming.
Okay.
And Jesse is immediately outside the bathroom and was about to open the door and stops, but then peeks inside. If you ever hear that in the bathroom, don't go inside. There's another bathroom. Go to the men's room.
Any other bathroom.
Leave the building. Pee your pants. We're big proponents of peeing our pants. Just do it. But she peeks inside. There are mirror shards everywhere. And Sarah's portfolio looks like she's ripped out some of the photos. Mm. And Jesse starts to help her pick them up. And Sarah starts smoking a cigarette in the restroom. And Jesse says, I thought you honestly did great. I thought you're beautiful. And Sarah says, don't pretend you don't see it. How people notice you and they see you. Me, I'm a ghost. It's just like, I don't know, man. I just got here. I live in a shitty motel in Pasadena. Like, you know.
There's a mountain lion that's there with me. It's a nightmare.
Keanu Reeves may or may not be a predator too. And Sarah says, what does it feel like to walk into the room like it's the middle of winter and people look at you like you're the sun? And Jesse says, it's everything. Sarah lunges at Jesse, and Jesse sort of puts her hand on the floor like she rocks back, and it cuts her hand open. And so she's gushing blood with a piece of mirror jammed in her hand. Sarah asks, okay, can I see it? But when Jesse offers her hand, Sarah grabs it and starts drinking her blood out of her palm. Allison, if that were you, what would you do?
What would you do?
I am yanking my hand back and running away and won't stop running until I hit Utah. Like, that is like, get me out of that. Like, I'd rather live with the mountain lion. Like, this, that is not, no one's drinking fresh blood out of my hand.
And all I can say, because I completely agree, and I think most people who had their wits about them, they would absolutely do the same. I think the movie does kind of do a good job of like, well, where would she even go? She doesn't have a family.
Right.
This is like one of the four people she's met in LA. She's a teenage girl. Like, I think they set up a good way where it's like, she probably wouldn't leave because she would just, again, blame herself or chalk it up to some weird experience.
You're like, I guess I don't get it. Like, you know, you self-doubt
Yeah, you wouldn't be able to necessarily leave in the way that ladies are. Right. She needs to be able to get out of there.
I'm out of there. I'm hitting the bricks.
Exactly. So Jesse runs back to her motel, and she sees Hank sort of ranting to himself in the parking lot outside the manager's office, and she sneaks past him. She's like, I can't deal with this. Only to look out the window later and see him staring up at her.
Nope.
Mm-mm. She goes to the bathroom and she has some cleaning supplies, and she tries to clean her wound, which is pretty gnarly. Like, it's still gushing blood, only to hear a knock at the door.
Glass in your hand.
And again, I'm like, oh, there's no way she has health insurance. You know, I'm like, well, if she went to the ER, I mean, she's probably trying to avoid it. Luckily, when she opens the door, it's Dean, who hands her a bouquet of flowers, only for Jessie to collapse, and her head sort of falls back on the carpet next to the spilled roses. And there is something very Lana Del Rey about the whole endeavor.
Oh, yeah. I get real Lana.
Yeah.
Whole movie, really.
And there is something that I was thinking about also with regards to this movie, where there is like, when you're in your 20s, being miserable is kind of romantic. Like it feels
100%.
And like to be 23 in New York, to be like, oh, my life's terrible and I'm in love with like my miserable self.
Yeah, walking down the street, like listening to sad music and it's cold and you're in a coat and smoking a cigarette and it's all very sad.
Yeah. And you worked in fashion for a little bit. I never worked in it, but I know what it's like to be like, sort of like my beauty and my misery are sort of like the only things I have going on at a certain point. So of course you have to romanticize being miserable because it's the only option not be miserable. Exactly. Right. Like you do not have the information to make yourself alive. And also if you're listening to this, you're like, well, I wasn't like that. Congratulations on not living in New York and LA.
Yeah, right. You must have had a very nice life.
I'm really excited for you. I'm so glad. Yes. You probably got a lot more done than us. Like, you know.
I didn't get anything done in my 20s.
Oh, I know, just looking out the subway window, just fucking, I'm in a movie, but also I'm very sad and I'm going to cry in a McDonald's bathroom. But there was something where I think of like teens. And then like Lana Del Rey is just sort of like the one that comes to mind is like,
yeah.
Like sort of romanticizing the negative parts of people trying to strip mine your femininity, like almost like, oh, daddy's going to like, you know, whatever, teach me or hurt me or do something where it's like, instead of yourself as yourself, because we do not teach people to be themselves, especially when they're young, you're like, what is a trope? It's like, well, I'm miserable and I'm a young, beautiful woman. I'm a vessel. Yeah. And the only way, and of course you're going to romanticize that because like, that's your life. Yes. It is. Right. You are miserable. Like you're miserable. I was miserable and beautiful in my 20s and I didn't enjoy any of it.
Nope.
And now I'm on my, get my library card and go to the dentist stage of life, which is great. But I always think about my friend. I have a good friend who's like married, 40, fat, like has an incredible job, teaches at a girls' school, teaches drama. Like I've seen their productions they did in Astoria, fucking sobbed. But she sees like how obsessed teen girls are, obviously, with their body and like getting men's approval. And you know, I'm in the weeds with that because of, again, coming out so late. And she's like, and I said, well, you know, I mean, you know, it's sort of like you're an example of like, you don't have to have a traditional body to like be happy and like have good sex and like have relationships. She's like, the problem is they don't want to hear that from their fat 40-year-old married mom drama teacher.
Because that's like, not romanticized as not like romantic. Something you would want. It's like there's nobody looking at that life, even though like we're both like, that sounds incredible and terrific.
All I want to do is sit on a porch. And it is what it, like, it's like, oh, the things that I thought were not cool or like dumb or like, I don't want to do anything like that my parents did. That's all I want to do now. I just want to relax.
That's aging. That's what our culture does. It's like youth is valued and youth is exciting. Aging is boring and being old is nothing. And it's like, oh no, it's actually great once you get
to it. It's
really
great. And we'll talk more about that. But it's like, you have to romanticize these things because they're told that's your worth when you're especially as a young woman.
Well, because you don't have any other currency because you aren't you don't have a ton of like experience doing anything. Nobody trusts you. You also don't know anything. Like, it's like beauty is all there is.
Yeah. And especially I think is like young people, no one wants to listen to them, even though all the young people I work with have really incredible insights that people should be listening to.
And see,
honest to God, thank you. Please. Well, you see how they see us. You know what I mean? We see you, but you see what we're doing, you know?
Yeah, we're a mess.
But so Jessie collapses on the floor of her motel room. We sort of see these images. There's an upside down blue triangle, a red pyramid, and then hands pushing through the wallpaper of the hotel. And when she wakes up, Dean has gone down to get like supplies to fix her hand. Mm-hmm. And while he's there,
left her there, like passed out.
Well, she wakes up. I think he puts her on the bed. They talk.
Oh, I see. Oh, and then he goes. Got it.
But then also, I guess the reason she was avoiding Hank is Hank wants $200 to fix the door, even though he's the one who broke it down because he didn't want to like take 2 seconds and try to figure out the lock, you know?
Right.
And
charge the mountain lion.
I know exactly. He basically he gives Hank $140, mm-hmm. and Hank tells him, "I know you're seeing that little girl up there. You know, I'm just telling you, if you're paying me money to fix her door, you better be getting something out of the deal."
Ew.
And he says, "And if she's not giving it up, check out room 214. I got a lot of girls staying here. That girl just got here from Sandusky, runaway, 13 years old, real Lolita shit." And again, Dean, is he attempting to date a 6-year-old? Yes. But at least Dean has the decency to be repulsed by what Hank says.
There's some line in the sand for Dean. Okay, fine.
And later we see him getting like a pair of like those like medical tweezers, like you get at CVS, and pulling the glass shard out of Jesse's hand. So again, he is trying to be there for her. Next time we catch up with Jesse, we are at the Roberto Sarno runway show.
Okay.
Gigi has also been booked. So again, Gigi is booked, busy, and blast.
She's booking.
And everyone's getting their hair and makeup done. And the makeup is, again, a little on the nose. It's like a smeared blue eye, like a red smeary lip. It's just clown makeup, you know?
Yeah.
And Gigi spots Jesse and says, what are you doing here? It's like, but you know why she's here. She's about to take your job. You know, she's about to become a star.
Here she comes.
And she says to Jesse, you know, you must be fucking him. Roberto Sarno doesn't just let anyone walk his show. And I'll be honest, and look, maybe this character could, of course, be bi, be pan, like have any sexuality. As it is written and it is cast played. And as it is played, he is a gold star, grade A, dyed-in-the-world homosexual. And again, it's like, no, he didn't book her. Like, it's like, it doesn't have to be sexual. Like, and that's true of the fashion industry. It's like, it's not that it's all sexual.
It's not about him wanting to have sex with her. It's about him knowing that everybody wants to have sex with her and also, making the value, like that being her value, not necessarily like the one-to-one of like this man.
Right. And I think like there is something that's like, you could be not appreciate, but like you could objectify someone, not sexually. And also like you can think someone's beautiful and not have to be sexual. And I'm trying to work on a stand-up joke because I kind of feel like that's how I feel about men. Like I do find men attractive, but I find them attractive, not objectifying sense. I mean, just like physically men being attractive.
Sure, of course.
But in the way that like a bouquet of flowers are attractive, which like, well, you still kind of want to fuck them, right? Like there is something, or eat them or something. Like there is this like desire.
Are you saying that like you see beautiful flowers and you're like, I could eat that?
Oh, absolutely. And maybe that's just me. And maybe that's like for me to unpack with my therapist. But there's something where it's like, it is like you want beauty, but most of us are like,
you want to consume beauty in whatever way.
Exactly.
Accessible to you.
And that's quite literally.
And it might not be sexual. Like it might be something else, but you want to take that.
Yeah. And I think it's like that. That's the human struggles, how to want beauty or be around beauty and not dehumanize the person who is beautiful.
Who is beautiful.
That's what much of feminism is. Like, it's like, that's what we're all trying to do, you know? And so this is, again, an example of like, and she says, I don't think I'm his type. And Gigi says to her, well, why not? You're very masculine. Where it's like, okay, Gigi. Okay,
what are we doing now? Like transphobia? Like grow up.
I mean, yeah, exactly. I mean, and so Gigi sort of blows past this and she says, you know, I didn't even have to audition. I didn't go to the thing that you went to. I was just picked. And when I show up, I just pick what I want to walk in because Roberto knows me so well and he thinks I'm incredible.
Not how things work, but sure.
And then she says to Jesse, do you know what I want? I know you want to ask me what I've had done. And she runs down all the plastic surgery she's had, which is like, she had her breasts reduced first. She said that it's better. The clothes hang on me like a hanger. And then she got it all done. She had her face, every aspect of her face done. She's had lipo. She's done it all. She looks great. And part of me's like, well, you are a working model. I don't know. It's like, it works, you know? But she sort of looks in the mirror and looks at the clown makeup and says, I don't know about this year's makeup. And Jesse says, you look perfect. And then she asked, did it hurt, all the surgery? And she said, yeah, but like, it was worth it. No one likes how they look. And Jesse tells her, well, I do. Just then, an assistant comes to grab Jesse and tells her Roberto wants to see her. It turns out Roberto wants Jesse to close the show, which again, I don't know fashion, but my understanding is that's the headliner spot.
Headliner. Yeah. It's usually like the biggest, the gown.
The blowout gown. Exactly. And she has this like gorgeous, elaborate blackout. And then has a big fake braid that's very 2016.
Yeah.
Like a fat, almost like with like a little tuft at the end. Horrible. But it's interesting when she starts to go down the runway, she sees herself standing in a blue triangle of light at the back of the runway. And
like we had seen in the...
In her, when she passed out. Okay. And she sees herself, and she's sort of the evil glam version of herself, like the model version that's in red. And the model version kisses herself in a mirror, And we see Jesse's face smile back. And suddenly, so she's gone from the blue triangle into sort of this red triangle, which I think we're supposed to believe is like her complete sublimation into like the world of power yes. and beauty. And like, I'm allowed to do that. I'll be honest, as a woman, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. She thinks she's beautiful and she wants to make money. Like, what? Oh my, what a dark yeah. transformation.
Right. The thing it's like, oh, she's participating in the industry that she can succeed in.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I think we're supposed to think like, yeah, she has gone from this fucking this country side. Bumpkin, this Georgia peach, and she has moved to the dark side. And that's like, you're not getting this shit in Pasadena. You know, you gotta, yeah. you gotta go into the belly of the beast. Also, we see that Ruby works as a morgue makeup artist for extra cash. So okay. she does makeup for modeling shoots, but then she also has this day job. So we see her making up an older woman after she's passed. After the show, Jesse, who is now a literally has been to one more of my show and is a huge bitch. She looks incredible. She's got like a plunging like halter top. Her hair looks better. Her makeup's better.
Right.
She meets Dean and brings him to the after party, which is just sort of, it looks like it's at Musso and Frank's here in LA. Huh. Like it's like booths, dark wood, and brings him to meet Roberto Sarno. And they attempt to join Roberto, who's sitting with Gigi and then Roberto's assistant. And Gigi says, I don't think we have room for two more. And so they sort of sit at a table, like kitty corner.
Yeah.
And we hear Roberto's assistant complain that she had gone into an audition, but she was kind of baffled because they told her that her face doesn't match her voice. And Gigi's immediate response to say,
well, you can fix your face.
No, don't do that.
Why not?
Because you can always tell when beauty is manufactured. And if you aren't born beautiful, you never will be.
That's terrible.
No, it's true.
Which then I'm like, all right, again,
okay.
this is before perhaps we were talking about trans people and what they like being allowed yes. to live in public life. Like the idea that like your yes. natural beauty is the only beauty you're allowed to have.
You're allowed
I
to have.
Really disagree with that. And well, I think like, we also all understand that's insane.
The entire concept of like fashion and makeup and hair undercuts.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
Like, well, then I shouldn't be allowed to wear lipstick. Like under your like that's like false under your rules. Like
also
it's just
you're
not,
selling yeah like you were in the business of selling beauty, the idea of beauty to people. But he's saying like he has this like rarefied like yes. I'm a connoisseur of beauty, you know.
Yeah.
And Gigi says, well, I don't think it's always obvious when someone's had work done. And so he calls Dean over and has him look at Gigi and says, is she beautiful? And he says, yeah, she's fine. And Roberta tells him that's the word, she's fine. He points at Jesse in front of Gigi, in front of the other models, and says, true beauty is the highest currency we have. Which, to be fair, Allison, you did say that earlier. True beauty is the highest currency we have. Look at Jesse. Without it, she'd be nothing. And of course, Dean, again, to his credit, says, I think you're wrong. I don't think that she'd be nothing. And Roberto says, oh, I bet you think that it's what's on the inside that counts. And Dean said, that's exactly what yeah, I think is true.
That is it.
And Roberto tells him, well, I think if she wasn't beautiful, you never would have even spoken to her. And it's like, it is, that's true, but that's not what we're talking about. Like, also, right. when you, like, are attracted to people, it's not like we live in a world where only extremely attractive people are go on dates or people allowed right. to be attracted. Like, it's like, that's a fair point, but it doesn't contradict what Dean was saying, was like, there right. are many more things to a person. But instead, Roberto tells him, beauty isn't everything. It's the only thing. I was like, okay. Working in fashion would be really fun. Just like, as long as it's this part. Where somebody
this part.
Wheels
yeah, this like
around,
weird, like, yes.
Beauty isn't everything. It's the only
thing.
It's like, okay. Dean, of course, turns to Jesse and says, can we please leave? Like, this sucks.
Yeah.
And Jesse says, if you want to go, you can go. And he does. Later, she arrives home to find Dean sort of sitting on the steps up to her room. She says, what are you doing here? And he says, is that what you want to be? You want to be like those people? And she says, Dean, no, I don't want to be them. They want to be me. And climbs the stairs to her room where she, again, the metaphor, she takes Dean's wilted roses and throws them in the trash. I love that.
So that's heavy.
Just like, is that good? No. Is that fun?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
When Dean leaves, unfortunately, Hank is wasted and he emerged from the manager's office right. and we see him staring up at Jesse's window. She lies down on her bed. We see Hank's POV as he makes his way up to her room. Allison, he opens her door
ostensibly
with whatever keys they have in the management office. any fights at Jesse's, she should have just like dozed off in her clothes on the bed. I regrettably have to inform you, Allison, that he takes a knife out of his pocket and he slides it into Jesse's open sleeping mouth. She wakes up, of course. She starts choking on it.
Yeah. A knife?
And he laughs at her and he says, wider, like open wider. Meanwhile, I did think of like, this is a teen girl filming this. I'm against the film industry. Not really, but like, you know, this is all, you're Keanu Reeves. I'm sure you had a lot of conversations about it, but like, oh boy, you know?
Oh boy. Oh boy. Oh boy.
Now, if Keanu Reeves wants to put a knife in my mouth at my age, well, and consensually, well, on film, sure, absolutely. But
yes, of course.
This was like a sort of like running up against some like...
Like, ooh, the thing we're making the movie about is also what's happening in the making of the movie.
Exactly. Fortunately, she wakes up. It's just a dream. However, Allison...
Still had to film it.
She wakes up because she hears somebody trying to open the doorknob. Obviously, it's Hank.
Yeah.
So he's trying to get in because he does have a key. So she runs the door and is able to throw the deadbolt and the person can't get in. Allison, she hears him walk to the next room, room 214, where the 13-year-old is staying. He breaks into the room and she basically puts her ear to the wall. Jesse puts her ear to the wall and hears him raping the 13-year-old.
Call the police.
Screaming. That's what I didn't understand. Like, I was like, is there no room phone? Do you not have a cell phone? Just call fucking 911. Yeah. And also, there'd be other people in the motel who would hear it, but... Yeah. Again, she's 16, so I think we're supposed to think she panics. She doesn't know what to do.
General fear of, just how the world works, totally.
And I think that's what we're setting up is, like, she... It's like, we can see how fucked up this is. Because she's 16 and does not have anyone and her family's dead, she's learning that the world is brutal. Like, it's like, these are the things that are being shown to her.
Take it.
Yeah, and the only thing that's going to buy you out of that brutality is beauty and the power and money that it will hopefully bring her, you know? So it's like, I don't know. It's like everything she does this, I'm like, yeah, I get why you didn't leave. Is that you're like, yeah, well, the world's horrible. It's going to be horrible wherever I go. I'm a 16-year-old girl, you know?
Yeah.
Lana Del Rey was right about something. So she's right about that. But luckily she does call someone. She calls, not luckily for how it turns out, but in a panic, Jesse calls Ruby, who tells her, I'll leave as soon as you safely can. You can come stay at my place. You'll be safe. Jesse arrives and goes to shower. Ruby gives her some pajamas and Jesse says, wow, this is like a mansion. You know, like, how long have you lived here? And she says, oh, it's not my house. I'm house sitting. Mm-hmm. Jesse says, that's interesting because you said it was your house, but okay. Maybe I misunderstood. Right. Jesse puts on her pajamas and Ruby, or like a slip, and Ruby's completely made up. And she said, are you going out? But Ruby says, I'm going to stay here with you. And Ruby offers to brush Jesse's hair, just like her mother did for Ruby. And Jesse says, thank you, and tells her, like, I think you're really wonderful. I really appreciate this.
I'm nervous.
Ruby, of course, takes that as, like, okay, so this is happening. Ruby, like, wraps her arms around Jesse and starts kissing her shoulder. And Jesse immediately stops her. And I think when I was watching this at first, I was like, oh, great, lesbian predators. But, I mean, at this point in the film... Everyone is the predator.
So it's not as pointed to...
That's what I felt, you know.
Yeah. I'm with you.
And so I think, and again, like you said, like, it's about the different ways in which we try to extract, like, the beauty and the feminine beauty specifically of young women and other femme people, you know. And sort of, like, the access to this. And then in doing so, in order to rationalize why we should be able to get that, because it's not ours, you know, it's theirs,
right.
The particular beauty... We make presumptions about how we interact with their body. And I'm like, oh, this is the patriarchy. So it's like, yes, this is a woman doing it, but like you're taught that of this feminine beauty and the beauty of young people, we should have access to it, right? And whether that's because we're romantically interested or because we have power over them in the professional way, that is the patriarchal project. Mm-hmm. And so it doesn't preclude women from doing it as well. We are also raised in patriarchy. So I just took it as that, like, this is an example of, like, unfortunately, this is how we're all raised. So then if we don't question it, this is what happens.
Right.
And Ruby says, I thought that's what you wanted. And Jesse said, it's not that. It's just, like, I've never actually had sex with anyone. I'm not ready for it. Not interested.
Right. Because she's 16. Just turned 16.
Right. Unfortunately, Ruby basically is like, it's fine. Basically, it's like, oh, no, don't worry. It's going to be fine. Pushes Jesse out of the bed, kissing her, forcing herself on her until Jesse has to physically shove her away and Ruby kind of falls off the bed before stalking out. So I think Jesse's like, oh, great. So I have nowhere to stay, you know? And unfortunately, these kind of things happen where it's like, oh, well, I'm giving you something. So I'm allowed access to your body.
Something back. Right.
And that is something we have to unearth and like in all of our brains. Yep. And also like, I don't know. It's like, this is, again, it's not a great movie, but I think there's some interesting things here to discuss, right?
Yes.
Unfortunately, we see Ruby go to stare herself in the mirror. And it's also like, the problem is not that you're not hot. Like, Jenna Malone, you're hot.
You're hot.
It's that you are being predatory and attacking a young woman, a teenage girl. I don't know what to tell you. It's
teenage
not girl. In the mirror. It's inside.
Yeah.
And we see her draw a face and lipstick with X's for eyes in the mirror. In case we don't know that.
What exactly is that?
So in the morning, Jesse wakes up. Ruby has left her a robe on the chair. And she sort of walks through this gigantic, gorgeous house. Ruby's already gone because Ruby's at her other job doing makeup for corpses in the morgue. And Allison, I've said it before. There's a lot of things that we hate to see, right? You hate to see a lot of things. But one of the things you hate to see the most is Ruby doing makeup on a beautiful young woman's corpse, getting up, locking the door, taking off her gloves, hauling herself up on the slab, and then Allison fucking that corpse, all while imagining Jesse in her robe on her couch. Which I choose to take the scene as sort of my own, like from my perspective, sort of a rumination on consent. The reduction of women entirely to the body.
Sure.
And, you know, we're all doing it. This is just the most literal, disgusting way to do it. But it's like, oh, you're literally just using a woman's body however you want. And in this case, quite literally, because the woman's not alive, she can't consent to it.
Yep.
Even worse, I think it's
what
like...
What on earth is worse?
Well, okay, it's just that she's making out with a corpse a lot. And I just want to give a shout out to this actress. Her name is Cody Renee Cameron. And she did a great job. Like, I mean, like, to be like, you're going to be hired to be a corpse that is made out with and you cannot move. Also, like, her torso's been opened, clearly, like, for an autopsy and then put back together. Right. So she's not in the best possible shape, even
well,
as
actress
a corpse.
Didn't have an autopsy.
Well, no, I know, but I'm saying it's like what an awkward scene to have to shoot. Like you have to get all this, like on your nude body, get sort
you have
of
to get all of these prosthetics and makeup done just to have to be perfectly still. Like
while somebody makes out with you, yeah.
Couldn't they just like get a super lifelike dummy?
But not in 2016. But back at the ranch, she's put on sort of a fun pink and glitter eye look. Like she's kind of mesmerized herself in the mirror. And she also finds that a dress has been laid out by Ruby for her. And she sort of admires herself in the mirror. And I think for me I know I'm very much like in the weeds, like, sorry. Normally we just describe the movie, but I'm obviously like, I don't know.
There's a lot
this.
To process with this one.
And I think the only thing that, like, because I think we're supposed to think, like, wow, she's so totally, she's vain and she's, like, obsessed with herself in the mirror. And it's, like, that's the softball part of this is, like, do you really want to be, like, these beauty-obsessed freaks?
Right.
Like, you really want to be so vain? When, at least as women, and I'm sure for men, I don't want to speak for, like, men or non-binary people. You've had your own experience and you know exactly what we're talking about. But, like, the feminine part of this, which is women are driven like dogs since birth to be thin and beautiful. Of course. Could you imagine being so beautiful? All the doors in the world open to you.
Yeah.
Why would you
would
not
lean into that?
And that's also how I feel about, because I was reading about like TikTok, the TikTok trend where people talk about taking Ozempic, which is a type 2 diabetes drug. And that people are sort of using it off-label for weight loss. And I don't want to pretend like that's a great idea. I think there's a lot of danger to these sort of like miracle thin drugs that we don't know about until later.
Yeah,
you know?
So it feels very new and therefore scary because it's like, we don't know what a long-term version of this is. But also, I'm not a medical doctor, nor am I a person who has diabetes and understands that drug and what it does. And so like, this is me speaking out of my own ass,
no, exactly. And out of my ass, let me just say, people are like, can you believe?
Doing a lot of talking.
Can you believe that people are taking this to lose weight? Right. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes. Do you live in the world? Like, yes, of course they would. Like, again, and I mean, to be fair,
people
we're a little bit
take
older.
Tapeworms to lose weight. Like, of course they're going to take like a drug that you can get prescribed to you.
Yeah, like the idea of like, oh, can you believe this? You know, it's like, that's not saying I think it should be good that people with type 2 diabetes cannot access the drugs. But the psychological, like, can you believe this? Oh,
yes.
We can all believe this. Now, should everyone be taking it?
Can't.
That's a person. Right, exactly. Like, right. Yeah, it's kind of like, this is morbid, but I was watching a Norm Macdonald like compilation. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, you know, whenever somebody dies by suicide, they say, I can't understand why he does it. And I always say, you can't. And right. That's how I feel about this. I'm like, you can't imagine you can't. Doing something extreme to be thin and beautiful when right. we live in the that's world we live in. Like, and also, yes. And
people have surgeries. People have brutal, the surgeries to look beautiful, the surgeries to get thin are brutal on your body. And people do them every single day. Of course, people will take a medication. Of course, we will do whatever is on the table to access being thin and beautiful, because it is, of course, the most important thing you can be.
Yes.
If you are feminine. That is what is taught to us. I think that's wrong, but that's what's taught to us.
And I do think we have such a focus on natural beauty, but while we also are constantly modifying our bodies mm-hmm. and to reach a certain standard or a certain idea of ourselves. And I do think if you're a young person, I feel like the way that it was sort of, we were supposed to think about it, I think is either you completely capitulate to the project of trying to be thin and beautiful all the time, or somehow you were going to psychologically be totally free of it.
Yeah.
Let me just say, don't put your pressure on yourself to be either. This is going to be and the question fundamentally that I think she asked is not, can I be the most beautiful thin woman? Or alternately, how can I completely be free
right.
in a world where you're constantly being inundated with these things? It's a process. So don't judge yourself for not being further along.
Correct.
Ask yourself, what can I do to be genuinely happy? Yes. I feel like as women, we're not supposed to ask that.
No,
what does that
never.
Look like? And I do think there's something where it's some people having surgery and modifying your body is absolutely the right
happiness.
Move.
Yes, it's about happiness. It's about who you are and being comfortable in your body.
Other people, it is, I'm going to do what I can to step away from this and not scrutinize myself. And, mm-hmm. In whatever way that looks like, what could you do that every day of your life is not a battle against your own mind? That's what I'm saying. There's a lot of different ways to think about it. Whatever's best for you to not try to avoid the pain of being fat or old, because it's going to happen. And honestly, it's great. Honest to God, never comfy. Been happier. But rather, what could you do to build happiness? That would be my suggestion. Again, had something I wish I could have thought about. And again, can you even, if you're 22,
can you understand it when you're 20? I don't know.
It's also great advice. What the fuck? How do I do that? You know what I mean?
Right. You don't know what makes you happy yet because you're still new.
Yeah. And it's not cool. It's not cool to be old and fat and happy, but you will, when you get there, please allow yourself to be, honestly. Also, I feel great about myself. Do I, every time we get on Squadcast, see my own face and think, oh, this bitch again? Yeah. But
truly.
It's both. And it's always going to, no, I hate to be it's always going to be in a negative way. I just mean, do not beat yourself up if you're not totally clear of our constant indoctrination.
Right.
Anywho,
it is impossible to escape.
Yes. And we should be attacking, again, the system and not ourselves or each other based on our decisions. So back to the movie. Jesse sees there's an empty swimming pool in the backyard, and Ruby finds her standing on the diving board in the gown that was left out as night falls. And we see Ruby walk down into the pool. And Jesse, again, sort of has her little monologue. She says, you know what my mother told me? You're a dangerous girl. No mother has ever said that, but fun. We love it. It's like a little play.
That is fun.
I know what I look like. What's wrong with that anyways?
Women would kill to look like this. They carve and stuff and inject themselves. They starve to death, praying that one day they'll look like a second-rate version of me.
And I was like, gals, if I could just have one conversation with you about feminism, what's about to happen can be avoided. Unfortunately, Jesse walks back inside the house and she sees Gigi standing at the end of a darkened hall and says, are we having a party or something? Allison, Sarah steps out into the hallway and just fucking punches Jesse in the face.
Oh.
And then it is a full-on melee. Both Sarah and Gigi have knives. They eventually chase Jesse outside and back her up against the empty pool. And as Jesse looks in horror, Ruby approaches her and shoves her over the edge of the pool. And we see her dying. Jesse falls and sort of her skull
splits
open. Oh,
they pushed her in off of the
ledge of the pool
into an empty pool. So falling into a pit, basically.
Yes. So she falls, cracks her head open on the bottom of the pool. And as they look, we see her shuddering, slowly dying. And her vision become blurry as the other women walk down into the pool to come get her. We cut to Ruby in a blood-filled bathtub, her face completely caked in blood. And we also see Gigi and Sarah bathing blood off their bodies in a very explicitly porno moment
at
this point. But it is sort of the most beautiful, perfect female, white, young female body, The next day, we see Ruby, who's totally topless and has a bunch of tattoos, which again was a fun aesthetic decision. She's just wearing pajama pants and she has like all these tattoos. Yeah. And then uses a hose to clean out the bottom of the pool. And then that night in the moonlight, Ruby lays down naked on the floor of one of the mansion's many giant rooms under the light of the moon streaming in. Again, can you see me? It's the moon. And she lays down, she opens her
eye in the sky.
And a river of blood pours out from between her legs. And she smiles. And I think for me, this was like, boy, I'd like to have like a woman or a non-binary person. Like, these are all interesting things, but like, it's almost like they don't hang together quite like how you want them.
Yes, I could see that.
I don't know how to explain it. It should be a movie is more than the sum of its parts. And this is a movie I'm like, I like all the parts and I see the sum of them and I enjoy it.
But it's not quite more connected.
Yeah. And especially things like that. I'm like, all right, so what are we saying? What are we alluding? Like, what does that mean? Right. You're a vampire. But that day, that next day, Sarah drives Gigi up the coast for another Jack MacArthur shoot and sort of hangs out on set. And it's going to be Gigi and another model named Annie who are about to do the shoot. And Annie's talking to the hair and makeup person about her friend who just needs to retire. She hasn't got work in months because honestly, at over 21, no one's going to hire you. And she said her friend was so desperate, she went uptown to buy baby seal fat from some random woman. And Sarah kind of laughs. And Annie says, you think that's funny? Well, have you ever had a girl screw you out of a job? Essentially like, well, you would do the same thing if
you would do the same
something
thing
like that. And Sarah says, I did have a girl screw me out of a job. And Annie says, well, what do you do about it? And Sarah says, I ate her. Allison, the shoot begins. And before, as it does, I ate her. The shoot begins and Jack immediately fires Annie, the second model, because he's seen Sarah and Sarah looks so beautiful. He said, will you join me as the second model? Again, the implication being like Sarah has never been hired by Jack MacArthur and this is her breakout thing.
Yes.
Breakout moment. Unfortunately, Allison, they have to pose by a pool and Gigi keeps looking into the bottom of the pool and starts to violently retch, remembering, of course, how they killed that teenage girl the day before. She's able to run into the bathroom and sort of pull off her couture before she starts vomiting and she's gagging and screaming. Sarah follows her and finds her on the floor. And as she watches, Gigi pukes up Jesse's full eyeball. The eyeball rolls out of her mouth. And Gigi sobs, I need to get her out of me. I need to get her out of me. And she grabs a pair of tailoring scissors.
She threw up an eyeball?
She threw up an eyeball.
Really breezed by that.
She grabs a pair. Well, there's something else about to happen. She grabs a pair of tailoring scissors and she stabs herself in the stomach and sort of drags it upward, ostensibly to like pull Jesse out of her. But of course, that's not a real thing. So she collapses.
Right. That's not how we digest what we eat.
Allison, Sarah bends down, picks up the eyeball and eats it.
I don't want to look at you. I'm so angry.
Please don't, because I got a big fucking smile on my face because I love this shit. Sarah puts on her sunglasses, walks out of the room, and goes back to the shoot. Of course, I'm thinking, well, they're gonna find her. They're in just like a beautiful house in Malibu, you know? And we ended a shot of sort of, I don't know where we are in California, but like water and like a vast expanse of sand and like the mountains in the background. And we see a blonde woman walking from behind. And I assume this is Sarah. So she's sort of like walking towards her future, but it could have been basically anyone else except for Ruby, who's a brunette, but everyone else is a blonde. So I was like, it could have been Gigi. It could have been Sarah. It could have been Jesse. Like I presume it was Sarah, but regardless. Here's my conclusion. Cause I wrote these notes at the end because I was on one about this.
Yeah. I mean, when aren't we on one?
Exactly. And then, I already kind of said this, but it's like, The concept of vanity or women's vanity, it's like they want to punish us for being vain and also for being fat.
A system that they bought.
Yeah, it's like if you were vain and you subscribe incredibly closely to like the quote unquote feminine ideal, you will be punished for your vanity. If you don't, you're like, I'm actually gonna be fat and happy and I don't want to have to care or whatever that looks like to you. Like I'm allowed to be happy in the body that I have and do what I want with it. And that's my life. They'll punish you for that too. So it's sort of like, bitch, grow up. That was my comment basically. It's like, like if you're able to tap into actual happiness and not just fulfilling your societal role, it will not only get you to a better place with your own body. It got me to a better place with my body, But it actually like opens up like so much more mind space. And again, not that like, listen, do I want to take a pill and become thin? 100%. But in the meantime, I'm just not going to punish myself for both not being that or also having those thoughts. Does that make sense?
Yes. Like, yes, yes.
There's no point to it's going to affect you in the way it affects you. It's almost like do your best to be happy underneath the way we live.
Yes.
And that will allow you to be like, how can I help undermine the system that exists?
Right. Yes. Find happiness and value that is not tied up in this system and tied up in beauty as much as you can, but also it's okay if you want to buy the fucking makeup.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's both. And that's the thing is like so many of these conversations we don't, in America, we don't like to have a complicated conversation. And to me, this is a very complicated conversation that I myself don't really know how to talk about. Obviously, you know, give us your feedback.
Figuring your way through it.
Yeah. But you know, it's like, how do you balance these things? No one knows because no one's figured this out because we still live under patriarchy and the systems we exist in. So don't put it on you personally to figure it out.
Right.
But, you know, we could talk about it. And, you know, again, like everything else is very complicated. And a really good book that this movie reminded me of, did you ever read Mary Gateskill?
Of course.
So Veronica, which is exactly
one of my favorite books.
Oh my God. Yeah. So I'll just
read it. Very good book. Go read it.
It is about a teenager named Allison who's discovered by a photographer and then sort of like is immediately thrown into like the high fashion world of Paris and Rome.
Yeah.
And New York. And she meets sort of her like an older, like not model, like eccentric woman named Veronica. And it's sort of both about like this, their relationship and also sort of her experience in, you know, sort of the seedier, darker parts of modeling. But I don't know. I mean, it's probably like, I haven't read it since we were in our 20s, but I really remember liking it and getting a lot out of it. So again, Mary Gateskill, if you want to go on, have your Lana Del Rey moment, go ahead and read it. Just start reading Mary Gateskill. There's a lot of misery in incredibly well-written books.
Darkness
and femininity.
She's a terrific writer.
Yeah. All right. So fatal mistakes, Allison, what do you think are some fatal mistakes? That people may have made in the movie The Neon Demon.
Fatal mistakes.
I mean, the mountain lion getting in the room, like the least horrific thing that happened in this movie, but like it's such a sign of like, this isn't for me. I shouldn't be.
Yeah.
I need to leave. like that, like I would, you know, just staying in LA after and like pursuing, like, I get it. Like, this is an opportunity being handed to you and you kind of don't have to do a lot because you just exist as beautiful. Like, it's not like you have to be like, oh, now I have to train for this marathon. Like, just be there and be pretty.
Yeah. I guess it's like, where else would she have
gone?
There
were so many signs to not continue on this path.
Yeah. And I guess, again, that those signs were the regular signs that if you're a young person you see anyways, like you do see a lot of like, well, this seems bad, but I don't know what else the fuck to do.
Right.
And I don't know. I kind of, not forgave her, but like, I kind of understood being in that situation, being like, yeah, well, I don't have anywhere else to go. So even though this is bad.
Yes.
You know, and I think again, not a perfect film, but I think did a good job setting that up. At least, which I feel like. But yeah, I feel...
I'm not calling the cops on the horrific rape of a child.
You got it.
I know that wouldn't change the alternative, like any thing that happened after that for her and her own, you know, mortality. But if you see something, say something.
Yeah, I know. And it's like, it sort of like makes, you know, modeling as the fatal mistake in some ways. Like to enter this industry, which is so punishing and so... You know, again, minds you, your young body for its beauty. It does feel like, I'm sure there are people who have modeled who have had good experiences, but boy, it sure seems like a lot of people have bad experiences.
Almost all of them.
So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to say don't go be a model, but
it's a job.
You know, when it starts to be horrible, know that you can leave.
No, you shouldn't. Nothing is worth what happens in this movie. So if you're getting an eerie sense, like you don't do anything else.
And because there's something too, as a young person, like people talk like, well, you have to know what you're doing. You have to have your path. And then you're 25. You're like, well, I'm too old to not try to do this. It's like, No, no. And I guess modeling, you age out anyways.
Ugh. Yeah, right. It's like, it's such a tiny window. It's like, yeah, do anything else.
And then spooky scale, Allison, where would you place the neon demon on the spooky scale?
A spooky scale.
I think there's a lot of fun in this movie. I think there's like a layer of horror that is more social and cultural in this than there are in some of the other movies we do, where it's like, as a woman who has been a young person, like, I think it has just an extra like feeling to it, because it's so grounded in real systems that we have to constantly confront in our lives and have, you know, from birth.
Yeah.
Throwing up an eyeball is never going to leave my mind. 7.
Okay, great. I'm going to give this a 4. Because I feel like there were a lot of like individual interesting moments. I don't know if I was scared by any of them. The only moment that I genuinely think I was scared by was
the light.
When the light's being shut off.
Yes.
When she's initially getting her photo taken. Horrifying. Beyond that, yeah, I thought it was interesting. I mean, it's beautifully shot. But I think for me, you know, you just want to, I don't know, I want every movie to be The Exorcist. You know, I want everything to be the thing. I want it to be the, or The Ring. I want, and to me, is like, I feel like this could have been one for the ages.
Really,
and it just,
a lot of potential. And, it's, you know, sadly didn't live up to like what it could have been, but still feels like it was a fun one.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I enjoyed it, but not particularly scary, I don't think. But yeah, well, thank you everyone for listening, and my diatribes will continue apace, so I apologize in advance.
That is what this podcast is for.
Yeah. In the meantime,
if you wouldn't mind,
please keep it spooky. Please keep it spooky. We love you very much.
We love you.
Ruined is a Radio Point production with executive producers Alex Bach, Sabrina Fonfetter, and Houston Snyder. Recorded and edited by Kat Iosa.